bought my first ski when I was 10 years old. Jumped 3 times and broke my fishing pole. Reminds me sometimes of my 88 Ford, towing the old tin boat and never port. Shoreline sand got in my reel, blew the pawl out, grown man don't cry. Caught her big fish one night at
All right, folks, welcome to the Muskie 360 podcast. Jay Bird.
Steve.
It finally sounds normal.
It sounds so good.
I am broadcasting live from my frickin' house that I haven't seen since July. I think I was here for a couple days in between. It is nuts, guys. Sorry about last week, I'll tell you. I've said that a bunch over the last few months, but my schedule has been berserk. If you want to know what it's like, everybody's like, oh, it's fun to be a fishing guide. And it's like, I've got, it's not. So I've got a lot of things going on, I guess. And it is just, it is juggling, Jay. I am juggling. Keeping those.
A lot of traveling.
Just came back. Yeah, where I was. It was nutty. So I'll tell everybody. I don't care. So they have these big trade shows, right? Basically you go to the hotel, the Marriott, and you have these distributor trade shows, Jay. And if you want to see guys walking around with clipboards evaluating baits, and you don't know if they've been in a boat for maybe they haven't been on a boat ever, who knows? It's definitely the corporate side of fishing. So it is a different animal when it's not like the Bash. That's why I love the Bash, and obviously we're working on having the dates on that here soon, but I've seen every side of a trade show this year, Jay, from the Bash to ICAST to FTEX to just doing this distributor show. It's crazy.
Distributor shows are like, I get to sit in a chair for 3 days.
Oh man, you know, shockingly busy. A lot of, especially with the new stuff. I'm catch everybody up to date on what's going on there. So Muskie Shop is going to have first crack, like we always do, because it's basically like, you know, obviously all the tie-ins here. But we're going to have first crack as far as the Muskie Shop at Critter, Menace, and Banshee. Right? You don't know much about these. Triple threat. But those will be, I think Jody Michael's going to do a banner on those. So I'm going to give you guys the inside scoop of what's going on, kind of what happened bait-wise. We're going to talk about new stuff, but it's sort of catching up on this because this is just killer. So a lot developed over the last couple weeks. Went to that FTEX show. Again, wooty woot, got a trophy, throw it on the shelf, move on. Who cares? But we've disseminated a lot of these prototypes amongst people, and it's, Jay, it's changing the way you can do some things, right? And it's very interesting as far as, like, especially with Menace, really changing what you can do as far as a jerkbait thing, where we're getting some really pronounced left to right and super erratic, that hunting action. And then you've got Critter, which is essentially a drop shot. It's just, there's so many ways. It's really neat when you throw stuff in the hands of other people to see what they do with it. And so what's going on is you're going to have uno dos tres of the smaller guys coming out, and we finally got it right because this year we screwed things up. I'm talking from Livingston. The Magnus came out before the Mustang, and that was just production. That's just business. But you had the Mustang, which is a smaller offering, and the big guy came out in the spring, if you will, or late winter, and you have the small one came out in the fall. So you will have the three small guys coming out beginning of the year. Those have been like the crux of what we've been working on, just because everybody's been asking and doing these trade shows and talking to people, and people go, oh my God, right? And especially the Bash, it was really interesting at the Bash because that handful of people that saw these baits are the only like anglers that have seen them, other than pros that have prototypes. And everybody was flipping. And so we are already in the stages. It's green lit. It's going to happen, which you are going to have. And these are working names, but you're going to have Mega Critter, right? Super Menace and the Mustang GTO. So you're going to have a 9.5-inch Mustang, which is going to be scaled up. Mega Critter. Dude, Mega Critter. I already have. It is ridiculous. So, you know, all these downsized things where definitely want to cross-pollinate and make them accessible. We're going to do some bigger offerings there, too. And I got a couple other tricks up my sleeve. But that's kind of the
rundown. Yeah, when you say downsized, they're not too small for Mosky, by the way.
Oh, okay? No.
Not at all.
No, that's the whole point. It's very funny where, and I just forgot, of course, got to talk about the other day. The whole deal with this is I wanted to do something insanely different. And it's, and again, a lot of guys fish the stuff we talk about on here. And it's with Critter, I just wanted to do like something insanely different that hadn't been done before, and Menace as well. And with Banshee, remind me to talk about Banshee. But the deal with all these baits is like the Mustang's tearing it up.
Yeah.
Tearing it up. I mean, it's moving on. I say no more, fam, as the kids say. Mm-hmm. Mustang is gone ridiculous from the standpoint of the amount of people catching fish on that is just stupid, right? Because you have a better running depth, you have more thump, more vibration, more belly roll than any of them. If you own the other ones, throw them and you go, oh, okay, now I see the difference, right? So kind of the next phase of what I'm doing bait-wise is the crap I've had in my head because I've kind of appeased everybody and taken it kind of that next step and doing the stuff that's kind of rattled around in the brain, which is like I'm holding a Critter here and you go, there's not a drop shot musky bait. Well, there is now. And then the open water application. So we'll cover that in videos. Obviously, me and Jay will work on that here subsequently. But that's kind of what's cooking of some really, really different stuff. So I'm excited about that. And I keep forgetting it's like kind of the bastard child of the bunch. And I talked about it a bunch at the shows. And we'll kind of unveil these as we go. There should be pictures on the Musky Shop site, I would say, in the next week or two. But the Banshee. And Jay actually sent you one forever ago. And then we've finally got what we call paint samples.
Yeah, the crankbait.
Crankbait. So
yep.
Deal with that dude, right? And when you see it, and for all the podcasters, when you see this guy come out, let me grab one off my shelf. So what you're going to notice with this bait, which is the different ball game here, right? And we'll talk about it more later, but I had to explain this to a million people at the trade shows, so it's fresh in my mind and the spiel, but, you know, I made the dang thing, but, you know, covering. First and foremost, soft replaceable tail, okay? That means you can do a lot with this, from removing the tail to change the profile to adding any size grub or whatever you want to add to the back. You could add a power pout. You can do whatever you want. Right, so there's that. But what is this bait at its core? Is it as a suspending jerk bait that's going to be like $20? And I was sick of, you get these suspending jerk baits for musky, and you have pretty much the choice of a Rachel from Livingston or a ERC triple D, right? So you get double D's and triple D's, but you don't have like a really solid downsize jerk bait that's not some wood crap you can't rely on. So this is a just stop, pause, super suspending jerk bait. But in the rear of the bait, you have a tiny removable weight, much like you're cracking and tightening all this other stuff. Now, if you take that weight out in the rear of the bait, you now have a quick float back, a la a Lungeon 22 short or, you know, all these other kind of downsized crankbaits. So I wanted a downsized crankbait. This sucker's what, 4 inches? I don't know. I'm not good at that. I don't eyeball anything.
I'd say body size is around four and a half plus tail.
Yep. Right. We're downsized here. But I wanted something that was kind of like spring and downsizing and versatile. So you have a suspending jerkbait crankbait that's downsized, because I've found it so difficult over the years. You take like your Rachel or your Triple D, and we're trying to get these negative and neutral fish up with something that has kind of that stop, pause, wounded look to it, and the offerings are a little bit too big. So if you fish suspended jerk baits, that's in the wheelhouse. You take out the rear weight and you have the quick float back, but, and this is why this bait took forever, it will troll 5 miles an hour with a left to right wander. So if you put the weight back in, you've got that left to right wander of You know, it's a tip of the hat to like a supernatural kind of wonder. It's not the same, but you know, everybody, it's no secret I love those baits. So if I'm going to do a downsized crankbait, I want a left to right wonder. Finally drilled it. We'll troll up to 5 miles an hour and we'll hit 12. So you've got something that's 0 to 12 with a left to right wonder that is bulletproof, musky size, thick profile. So this thing doesn't get enough love. That's why I bring it up. And so we'll show more on that as we go. But that's kind of the comings and the goings of what's rattling around my brain of trying to fill in all the gaps of stuff I've ever wanted. But, you know, that's what's happening. So we'll keep you abreast of that. Like I said, super stoked, chuffed, the kids might say. Super stoked about Critter and Menace and Banshee and then obviously the follow-up later in the year, you have the big version. So there's that, and we got to catch up. Those Beast 400s finally showed up, it looks like.
They did. We got all four models in.
There you go.
Looking good.
Pretty rocking reels. I mean, Danny and myself, I think you put that video out of me and Danny talk. Did we ever do that?
I'm going to finish it up, put it out this week.
Oh, cool. That's how in the loop I am, folks. I'm not.
Last week was the how to fish suckers.
There you go. So Danny Herbeck and I kind of went over this, and I got to huck and chuck these guys while we were fishing in Canada together a little bit. So solid reel. You know, if you're a boo guy, this is going to check all your boxes for sure. The one thing I'll say, it's not a negative. Just the it is a far larger gearbox.
So I was just going to point that out. Yep,
When you see this thing and you're looking at the pictures, especially on the shop's website, there's a picture of one from the side, a complete side profile, mm-hmm. and you'll see how far down that gearbox drops. That's actually below the reel seat. So depends on how you fish. You know, but that's just something to take in consideration. It palms exceptionally well, though. That's what I wanted to get at, because pretty much, you know, aside from obviously they've got bearings and an anterior reverse on the non-hand side. So if you're a lefty, I'm talking about all the business in is on the left-hand side. If you're a righty, all the business in is on the right-hand side. They've minimized the components on the non-handle side, right? So very ergonomical, very easy to palm there. It's a nice feel there. But just like I said, taking consideration, just depending on kind of how you fish there on the gearbox, if that's going to be the right reel for you. But I think every buddy that came from beside that, you know, the Rockets and the couple iterations of the Beast, if you're a boo person, they've checked all your boxes.
Yeah, they got a low gear option out finally. A true low gear option.
Yeah. Really,
you know, a power fishing. So, yeah.
That's the thing. I mean, to be honest with you, you got a 4.8 and a 6.2. Mm-hmm. All right, cool. For me, that they had the, and my favorite reel of all times was the Revo Toro 61, the white ones. These are, you know, kind of the first iteration, and those were bulletproof. And I believe that was like, just a 5.3 and they made a 6.3. Don't underestimate the usefulness of the 4.8. Because for me, and I know Danny does this, and Herbie does it, a lot of guys, even if we're throwing tens, right, or staggers or whatever it might be, I'm not whipping out the high gear ratio reel. I don't want to sit there and kill my forearm, right? So once you understand, obviously we have it on the app and I've written it for Muskie Shop. We got it everywhere, like a write-up of understanding the gear ratios. But, you know, you're going to feel with that lower gear ratio, you're going to feel less resistance. So that's kind of what Danny had a lot to say in kind of the development of this reel. He's with Pure Fishing, which owns Abu and Savage. So he spent some time with this and it was like, okay, you don't need a high-speed option. I mean, for me, ripping rubber 6.2, who gives? Okay, it's one tenth slower than a 6.3, right? You're getting the same number of rant. It's the only thing, and that's one thing people are going, well, it's a 6.2, not a 6.3. That's
it's 34 inches per turn.
Right, that's a fractional spool turn. So your point, your 6 is the full revolution. The 0.2 is 2/10 of a revolution opposed to 3/10 of a revolution, right? So you're not going to notice that If I had been there, I would have just said make it 6'3" and just be done with it, so people don't be there. Even if it's like 6'3.2.8,
you know. You know,
I mean, come on, guys. Well,
especially with a big reel handle on there too. It's got a nice oversized handle. Plenty of cranking power.
They make, and I've not personally seen it. We didn't have them on the boat that day, but they make a power handle option. But the paddle handle is two power handles, in my opinion. And I love the material on it because I've noticed, and this is just me, I find, like, with the Tranqs, when I first get a Tranqs, the material's too slick, right? So the handle, even the power handle, there's nothing on it. It's just, it's actually, it's like a lacquered finish or whatever. It's a clear coat finish on the Tranqs. And those, they can be a smidge slippery. So with the Tranqs, what I actually do is I take like 1,000 grit sandpaper and sand the handle. That probably made somebody cringe, right? But I take the handle and I rough up the handle because I need to have a surface that I'm not sliding around on. Then on the flip side of the coin, you have the foam handles, which after a while deform, right? And so I've fished a lot of the foam handles, and after a while you kind of get the spot in them, and I hate it. I'm too tactile to, like, the, because the foam will get a nick in it, and you feel in it, and I go, I don't like the feel of that, right? Because there'll be some, I always end up with some unevenness or some nick or something of that nature where I feel it, and I go, I hate that. So hopefully this handle material, I think they might have drilled it, because I got to play with them enough where I went, okay, I feel comfortable with this, but it's got a good grip to it. Without, I don't think it's going to mar. I don't think it's going to scar, right? Because it's kind of rubberized, but it's not rubberized. Does that make any sense? It's like that material. It's, you don't feel like it's going to get all nicked up and chipped up, but it's also not slippery. So yep. Hopefully.
That soft foam is terrible. It's not that.
Some like it. Yeah, that's the thing. If you look at these handles, they're not soft, but who knows? We'll see. I'm going to play around with one here shortly. And
yeah.
Put the dog hours on her and see what else is nothing. We're so late in the year. You did get some of the new MM26. I'm seeing that.
Chad's got three new baits out. Yeah.
He makes some interesting custom made stuff. You got your prop blast. You got a blade knocker double mag. So that is what, a resin body? I'm guessing that's a resin body here. So
yeah, it's a hard body bucktail, basically, huge side profile, little spinner on the back, and combo blades. Not combo blades, double mag 8, and one's a combo blade, like a French and a mag or something. And they vibrate and they thump real good and they run great. Man. Smitty's got a new jerkbait. Did we mention that one too?
No, we didn't cover it. It came in between the Smitty 10-inch jerk.
Mm-hmm.
Actually,
adjustable weight system too.
I did notice something. I liked he's got the little weight kits that they just put out.
Yeah.
I like the packaging on it. It looked cool.
They've got a really neat logo going there.
Yeah, it looks
great. I think that's Jake's wife, I think, might have been instrumental in that.
Props
it looks
to
really
her.
Cool.
I actually saw that. Yeah. It looked classy, looked modern.
Really nice.
Props to you guys. That looks like...
Well, Big Smitty got a really big fish in Canada. They snuck up there for about 6 days, 2 weeks ago or something, on the new Smitty jerkbait.
Nice.
I shared that on social. Mm-hmm. It's good to see old Russ getting a hog and getting really excited. He was really happy. They had fun. It was just like him and his son, Jake, that went up there. So cool to see.
And the one thing we haven't touched on, because I've been MIA here, did get in a smattering of the Musky Buddy stuff. So if you have a different, if you're looking for the net mounts, we have the Musky Buddy rail mounts and the Musky Buddy 42 degree and a 45. And if you never heard of one of these things, it's the locking mechanism for your nets. So, long gone, Jay, are the days of putting the net handle in your seat and closing the seat strap.
I don't know. I still do that.
I'm just, you know, it is what it depends on how you want to do it. I'll say this: it's a great product. I haven't used them, or I've used them, but I don't personally use them. But I'll tell you what's interesting with this, and just one thing we need to consider when you're. If you're putting one of these on your boat, right, and you're going to do one of these net systems, you really, really, really need to make sure you're consistently landing fish where that is, right? Because And I say this because you don't want to have to drag that fish around the boat in the net with a bait in his mouth or whatever you have to do. Let's say you land him on the wrong side of the boat. So if your net buddy's on, say, port, and you land him on starboard, now we got to drag that fish in the net around. It usually is not a smooth process. And I say that just from trying to minimize wear and tear. But the product's great. It will hold that net rock solid. That fish is going nowhere.
Yeah, but extremely well made. Tons of great reviews on them.
Right,
yeah,
right.
We had too many people asking them for it. It's like, right. Okay, let's bring some in.
But when you're absolutely mounting it, that's what I'm saying. Think it through.
Yeah,
Because
and how far forward?
Right, yeah. How far forward? You know, do you fish off a port? Do you fish off a starboard? Right. If you're a human being, you fish off a port side only. That's what
humans do.
That's what adults do.
Gotcha.
But nonetheless, you position this thing in such a manner that you're not dragging that fish. You know, you got him by the engine. Now we got to lug him 20 feet wrapped up in the net, forcing him. You know, just something to consider. But once you get that system dialed in, it's phenomenal, especially solo anglers. You know, that's a pretty good thing because, I mean, everybody's been through it. Back in the past, Jay, I had a loop eye. Just the hooks. You go to the harbor. You go to the harbor freight of the Home Depot, and you just get this little eye loop drilled into the deck with a freaking bungee cord. In the past, you know, just anything, just rigging stuff. So definitely solves the problem. It's a phenomenal system. It's like books. Check them out, Jay. We are. You know, I'll warn you. When I say we're behind on Q&A, I mean we are behind. So if we don't get to you, we'll get to you down the rickety road, Jay.
Well put.
Smooth as butter. Anyway, Bruce. He wrote a whole book here. Let's see.
Oh boy.
For the past few years, I've been traveling from the States to Canada Lake, our Canadian Lake Nipissing. Rent a 16-foot V-Haul with a 20-horse motor. Is there any particular portable electronic nav fish finder unit that you'd recommend if you're in the same situation? Currently looking at the Humberbird Helix 5 with a chirp. Before I commit to anything, I'd ask for pro advice. I figured I'd like to ask for advice, purchase a portable. Okay, the battery, I'm thinking rechargeable. Okay. So, avionics app. Okay, I'm looking here. It's a really good question. I appreciate it. So, I'm not a hummingbird guy, right? Everybody up north just went, boo! Right? However, Bruce is running the Navionics app, or he's using it on his phone, things of that nature. Just to give you the skinny. So Hummingbird, Minn Kota, what is that? All Johnson Outdoors, right? So you have Johnson Outdoors. I just saw them at the trade shows. Great people. I run a Minn Kota. But Johnson Outdoors is kind of like this close entity. Lowrance is Simrad, right? So Lowrance is partnered with Simrad, which is inland and saltwater and governmental contracts. And then Garmin is obviously Garmin, right? So you have Garmin fish finders, you have Garmin smartwatches, you have everything. They've been in the GPS game long before anybody else. I mean, literally, I remember going out and having a LCD, you know, black and white fish finder, but having a Garmin handheld GPS, Jay. On the boat to
back in the day. Yeah, sure.
That's how it was.
Don't they have their own dedicated satellites too?
So that's what I was going to explain. And we're crawling down it and you go, well, why do you like Lowrance better in Garmin? Well, I like my Lowrance down scan because I'm very used to it. Right. I'm just used to it. I am actually now running. Goodness, I mean, we might be going. I've the rig's fresh, all this stuff, and I'm keeping my fish finders because I'm so accustomed to my Lowrance Elites, right? I like them. I don't need to change them. There's nothing that they don't do that I need to do. But the reason I stay with Lowrance is the versatility and also the interface, right? So when I even see the new Hummingbird units, the way their UI, their user interface has been laid out, I find it to be non-appealing to me, right? So someone has sat down and gone, this is how the menu system will work. This is the logic that appeals to me. Therefore, the user interface will reflect that, right? Lowrance and especially Garmin have gone, everyone uses a smartphone. We probably ought to make it feel like a smartphone, right? So jumping into a new Lowrance unit or jumping into a Garmin unit is very familiar feeling now because it looks like an app screen, even on the low-end units, right? You open it up. Here's little bubble-esque things that is downscan, sidescan, sonar, whatever you might options you might have. They look very smartphoney, right? And then the way the menus drop down. And so the way I've always looked at it, it's kind of like, in my opinion, Garmin is Apple, Lowrance is Windows, and Hummingbird is Linux. Four people understand what I'm saying. But I guess go, why are you making it so hard? Right? Why is the user interface flow so, in my opinion, flawed? So, but back to what's important, why would I pick, at the end of the day, I would pick a Garmin for what your needs are. Step down if you need to, go to Lowrance. The reason being I go with Lowrance for what I do for downscan is the versatility in their mapping, because Lowrance is in cahoots with CMAP, right? So you can get a 1 foot breakdown of just about any lake. So, and that's another thing, Jay. We haven't crawled down this too terribly much. Because of the different contracts that are at play and things of that nature, some of these units will not use the same mapping chips. You're looking at compatibility and all this stuff, right? So you look at a Hummingbird and it has to have X, Y, and Z chips, like Lake Master, whatever it might be. Lowrance will take this chip, you know. Garmin is kind of like, give me whatever chip you got. So Garmin is, you know, very versatile in what chips it'll take. It won't take them all, but it'll take a lot, right? So what I'm looking at is how much can I dial in my mapping to fit the way I fish or the way I need to fish. So Lowrance for me, I go in there and it says, pick your depth levels. I go reds 1 to 4, oranges 4 to 5, whatever, right? And I can color code my maps because if we're going to fish and we're going to fish structurally, we need to have a great understanding and a quick visual reference of that. So my biggest prerequisite is, can I color code my maps? How easy is it to do that? And are lake chips accessible? Right? The reason I say this, and I don't know that I don't have this on good authority, but I would recommend if you look at, say, CMAP, they might have something available for where you're fishing. And they have kind of overarching maps. They have all these different maps. So getting maps, downloading maps is a super easy thing. The other commentary I make on the newer fish finders in the last couple of years, Hummingbird, to get a individual map onto a unit for me when I've played with them, and I've owned them. I'm a couple years out on them, but I had them on another rig. It was very difficult for me to get, say, like an individual map where they'll sell them. They have a marketplace to sell these things. And then you're trying to stream the map from your phone to the Bluetooth to the unit. It just was clunky. If I'm operating on a Lowrance platform, I can go to the CMAP site, buy a map or download a social map, put it on any old SD card, throw it in my unit, and it works. Right. So that's the differentiator. But again, budget's huge there. But yeah, that's one thing we never really talked about that. But the reason I lean Garmin and Lowrance is because their GPS systems, unbeknownst to a lot, and I'm just going down the rabbit hole. The reason in the past it was very hard to jump from Hummingbird to Lowrance was because they used the different codecs for their GPS. They actually were using their own augmented system that caused you to stay in their ecosystem, intentionally making it hard for you to leave one platform and transfer to the other. Right? And so for me, I'm sitting here going, well, coordinates are coordinates. Why don't we just stay with the company that uses coordinates, right? And so that's what I like about Navionics or like Garmin. And I'm sure they've rectified some of it, but a lot of these companies, it's like, why are you making it difficult? You know, why can't I get my waypoints, or why is it nightmare fuel? But whatever, that's the rabbit hole on that. Give it a look, like I said, especially if you're getting those 5-inch units. the only other commentary I'd make on that front is get as much screen as you can afford. You know, sometimes you might look at it and you go, hey, the Garmin is X, Y, and Z, but I could get a 7-inch Lowrance. I'm scanning his question. He asked about battery. I'll say this before we just crush the subject. You can get on Amazon right now, and I say this because we don't sell them at Muskie Shop. You can buy these little lithium batteries, like 20 amp hour, 12 volt lithium battery, run that thing all day long, right? For very minimal cost. That's all you need. Sean, without getting
one more thing, Steve. Total agreement on the screen size thing too. The difference between a 5 and a 7 might not be a lot on some units financially, but
yeah.
Optically, it's a lot easier. I've got a 5. It's tremendously small.
What was the first one I had? I want to say my first mapping unit was a HDS 7. If that sounds right, or maybe it was a gin before that.
Okay.
Or hell, I don't know. Maybe a 5. It was hard to see, yeah, right? Obviously, yeah. Different era screens and things of that nature. But if you're driving the boat and you're going, okay, where's that waypoint? So the bigger, if you're using this for mapping and maybe switching back and forth, because you're never going to get a split screen on a small screen like that, right?
Mine does, and it's
impossible.
It's real small.
Unless you wear it like a visor, like if you tape it to your face while driving.
Right, like heads up display too.
Right, right.
Get the goggles.
You get a big hat, you clamp it on there, and you just never look. No, this is not, you know, do not take that as boating advice, but there you go. You could just wear it like a heads up display.
Right.
Shine. Without getting into planer boards, what's your advice to go from 3 trolling rods to 5? Currently running left, right, behind the boat. So we have 3 rods set up. Wants to go to 5, but no planer boards. You can do it, and here's what will happen. So everybody envision a boat in their head, and we're going back to the transom, right? You could run 3 rods, one straight off the port, straight off the starboard, and straight down the middle. Now, depending on your transom or your beam width, you now have 3 boats running tremendously tight to one another. So you can't use too much wander there. You could use kind of straight running crankbaits and then run 2 off the side. So you could do a simple 5 that way. So you got one sticking out from port, one sticking out from starboard, one sticking straight back off the rail, straight back off the other rail, and one straight down the middle. You can run a 5 spread like that. It's very tight spread, but you can do it. That's how I would do that. If you're like absolutely opposed to planer boards, that's how you could do it. The benefit of that is negligible, however. With that being said, let's say muskies are particularly not moving, and we need to get it just mere inches from them. You could run a spread like that effectively, but you know, if you think about say a 48 inch beam, we now have 3 baits running in a 4-foot swath of water. Might be overkill. You get what I'm saying, Jay? Makes sense? Yo, did I lose you?
Oh, yeah, it could be a big mess when you got awesome. When you get a fish on too.
Tight.
I mean, been there.
Yeah, it's not. Sorry, cut out there for a second, but yeah, I don't see a benefit to it. However, that you could get that done. What other options you could do there? I mean, you could theoretically take like an 8-foot rod and stick it in the water straight up and down out of the rod holder and then run like a high bait and a low bait under it. But I would recommend personally running planer boards just because, I mean, the difference of getting, you know, if you have 2 off the side. So let's say we do this setup right now. He's got 1 down the middle and 1 on port, 1 on starboard. You know, if you keep the spread in the back, so if we have a rod sticking out port, rod sticking out starboard, one in the middle. Let's say you're running 8-foot rods, right? From tip to tip and plus the beam, we've covered a heck of a lot more water, right? So an 8-foot rod protruding off of the boat 6 feet plus an 8-foot rod off the other side, protruding off another 6 feet, because I'm removing the handle length and everything that kind of goes through the rod at the rod holder, right? So an 8-foot rod, you probably lose 18, 24 inches, whatever. So
right, you would.
Right, so we now have, let's say, a typical beam on a boat. And what are they, most of them? Let's just call it six. So you've got 6, 12, 18-foot spread. If you do that, and now you add, let's say you put your other set of trolling rods out, and you put out a set of, say, blade planer boards or whatever you want to run, and you run those 4 feet out wider on either side, so you got rod tip, line, line, and you only spread the port and the starboard and the planer boards 4 or 5 feet, let's say, you know, your coverage area has increased tremendously, right? And that would be my thought, but, you know, if going from 3 to 5 without planer boards can be done. You just really need to think application wise of how you want to do that and what is the benefit. Without getting into boards, let's keep rocking here. Sorry, I need to stop rabbit holing so bad here. Owen, I've been fishing muskies recently and using the blade. Every time I get a follow, it seems to chase it but not bite. Is there anything you can do to make them bite? Using blade. Okay, we just talked about planer boards and my brain went two ways at once. I guess this guy's using blades, right? Not the blade planer board, because it's hard to figure out a planer board. So
he's using bucktails.
Using bucktails. I'm looking here for any other context.
Right. There's no blades too. That's right. There's vision, the exact same thing.
Right. There's no other context clue. So in the very, very beginning stage of the musky fishing, this is what you're going to run into. What I recommend you do, go to the Musky Shop YouTube channel or get on the Musky 360 app and dig into figure eight tips and tactics. There's tons of them. We got archives of them, articles, videos, however it floats your boats. There's actually podcast episodes if you go back through old episodes of rants and raves about figure eighting, right? And the thing I'll leave you with this is not every fish that follows will eat, but the better you get at musky fishing, the more it happens to be. Let's go here. Ben. My name is Ben. Well, fantastic. Good to know, right? His name's right there. My name's Ben. I had a question about when, if ever, you would have multiple people in the boat running the same baits, right? Okay, so we hit on this a few weeks ago, and it's such an interesting topic. You know, kind of what are we doing here?
No, it's a good question. Thing?
Right.
No, so, yeah.
And he says he recently had an outing with his brother fishing the top of a large section of a main lake structure. One was running a believer, one was running a bucktail. And in a 1.5 hour, my brother had 3 follows and netted a 40. My gut told me I should keep casting the crankbait. It was presenting to the same fish, at least I thought so. So it didn't change. It's got me wondering. Okay, so he goes on and on. So we got one guy that's got 3 follows, right? And we got one guy that's got nothing. All right. Let's think about reality here. This is family funsies, right? All right. He's with his brother. Switch it up. I mean, guys, catch a fish. If I got a dude, now the mark for me is, did someone just catch a fish or someone having increasingly higher activity rates than everybody else in the boat? Go that direction. You know, there's no trophies will be handed out today. So if somebody gets a falling, don't jump everybody in the boat. Like, let's say you got 3 people or 2 people. Keep it spread out until somebody's hooked up, right? And then maybe we go 2 people or so throwing something similar. And if the action continues, right? If we start with 1 bucktail and we got 2 whatever's else. If it's obvious, right? Or you just threw in the same 5 feet of water with your H2O barbarian or your jerk bait, whatever, just switch it over and catch fish, right? Now there will be no post-mortem examination of what you did right or what you did wrong. It'll only be in your own head, right? Nobody cares. So think about it from that perspective. Now from a guiding perspective, is I don't want all 3 people throwing the same crap, unless I think we talked about previously, Jay, like if it's obvious, it's obvious, right? I want to stay ahead of things. I want to see, hey, that's working really well, but will this work slightly better?
There you go. Yeah.
So different thought process. If you're out for one day or you're out for the weekend, buddy, let that shit fly. Catch fish. You know? Catch fish. Get it done. But, you know, just think about, okay, I'm good. Does he have a magic number? I saw that at the bottom. Do you have a magic number of contacts before you decide something's going on? I mean, I would say 3 follows and a 40 in the boat's pretty solid, right? If you have one come in and it's a hit and a miss, or you have one hooked up, or if you got one on and I've got 3 anglers, we better double up on whatever that was. If it's just me and a buddy, let's say it's 2 people and he gets one, I might wait till that other follow. But if you got 3 up and 1 in the net, yeah, we're well past that. I'll probably give him 1 or 2 before I go, what are the blade sizes on that again? What color are you throwing? What was that? Can I borrow that? Clifford, what rod and reel do you recommend for just getting started with musky fishing? Well, Clifford, do we have a package for you? Jay, cue the music. Today's prize package on The Price is Right. The shop has a bunch of combos here. Let me get over here. Let's see what we got. Is it just rods and reels, or we have it in combo? I can't remember.
It's in rods and reels.
Rods and reels.
Yep, yep, yep.
Welcome to the exciting world of rods and reels. Okay, getting here. Navigating. What's in the combo zone now? Okay, we're talking a just getting started set up here, right? And bang for the buck. They don't have them. Actually, there it is. Your best bang for your buck with a rod reel combo, in my opinion, looking at pricing as far as what we have now, right? What's available? Musky Shop Shield Rod, Pin Squall, low profile. $3.99. That's going to be ripping. The pins, a lot of people, I don't know if you know this, again, back to Pure Fishing owns pin as well, Jay. So if you're an old school beast fan, literally the pin, squall, and fathom are beasts with different gearing. Like if you put a pin, squall, and a pin, fathom right next to each other, they're identical as the old beasts. Just food for thought. But you can change the handles out. You can change the spool. They're the same reel. But the pin, squall, low profile combo with the Musky Shop Shield Rod. Just to cover it again for folks, the best way to pick your first musky rod is to consider how tall you are physically and how tall of a boat you're fishing out of, right? If you're 5'3" and you're fishing out of a canoe, you do not need a 9'6" rod. Most people, depending on height, if you're sub-6, 9 foot. If you're over-6, 9'6". That's kind of safe, right? If you're on the shorter side of things, you might want to look at 8'6". The thing with the 8'6" crowd, yes, they're a great rod. However, you typically do not have as wide of a figure eight. So that extra 6 inches extrapolated across an entire figure eight and the circumference of those turns, I want the extra length. So 9 foot, 9'6" if you're fishing out of a boat. If you're a bank yanker, maybe you could go 8 foot, 8'6", but that's going to be the best combo I'm seeing right now. I would not recommend you'll see some of the stuff. You got like the Daiwa Millionaire. That's the cheapest combos. Go straight to a low profile. Don't play around, right? Don't skimp on that. What are you thinking, Jay? Is there a combo I'm missing here? Because that's pretty rock solid.
Oh, we've got some combos with that other Abu, the Whatchamadinger, the something Max 4.
I don't think we have them anymore.
Well, we'll see if we can make any up. Maybe availability was an
Max
issue.
4? That's
Max. Yeah, that's even a little bit lower, you know, more economy priced than the squalls.
No, I thought
it's a decent reel. Yeah,
I would have. That's actually, they're sold out on the reel. My thing with that reel, I've got a bunch of them. Those are now my icy reels. If it's icy conditions and it's crappy out, I'm not afraid to tear them up. But they're pretty rugged. I got one guy I know down. My neck of the woods, he bought one and like the post and the center post on it broke, the actual brass, but that could be anything. You know what I'm saying? It's like, I've met people that hate tranks because they've got bum tranks, but You know, that would be good. The only other, I mean, if you're not accustomed to bait casting, you can get a Swivelo Genesis combo. But I think, like, if you're going to learn it from the ground up and you want that 9 foot or 9 foot six shield with the pin squall, I think you'll be happy with that. Can't go wrong, you know.
Yeah. Bulletproof. 8'6" minimum, you know, if you're shorter in stature. But yeah, you're going to be a lot happier with a 9 foot rod than an 8 foot rod. Yeah. Just a more proficient type of equipment. You know, that's what it's all about.
Right. If you got a Lund Tyee and you're sitting 4 feet off the water, get a 9'6" or if you're taller. Mm-hmm. I just don't bend over. Like, you don't want to be doing these, hey, let me bend over and figure eight and fall out of the boat or killing your back all day. Mitch! Hey guys, I've been focused my time on musky fishing this year in rivers and streams. Not had much luck until recently purchasing a shallow invader from the musky shop, and musky's been going nuts over it. But my question is, what similar baits to try would be a good follow-up bait to? Okay, so he's fishing shallow invaders, moving water fish. They love those critters. Pretty much, yeah, shallow invaders are a bait I can throw anywhere. I've never had a fear of throwing a shallow invader. Now, they've got a pretty pronounced wobbly action and a quick float up, right? Things that pop into mind that I throw. Let's say I'm on a shallow invader bite. Back to the same question, Jay, of how often do you double up or how deep on the same bait we should go? I am often throwing a Titan when clients are throwing shallow invaders, right? Because with a shallow invader, you either rip it, twitch it, jerk it, or straight retrieve it. Running in the same as like slightly below where I'll run an unweighted Titan or just with the lightweight, and I'm getting a different action with a quick float up. So shallow invaders for me, I'm running Titans as a follow up for that. Something I had in mind, again, we talked about it earlier, the Banshee unweighted. That's kind of something in mind too. The same kind of running depth when you take the weight out, because there's not a lot of follow ups for this thing. Another bait that I've had, they're disposable. You got to keep that in mind with this. And they're not that, in a river situation, you're fishing a rocky river, you're going to suffer a little bit because they're not very long lifespan, is the smoker tackle, the SS sheds, right? So they have a smoker tackle SS shed MD, which is a shorter body than a shallow invader with a very similar fat action. But if you need an immediate downsize shallow invader follow-up, that would be a good thought. However, like I said, that's a balsa wood bait. Depending on how the fish hits it, we'll see, right? It's kind of like fishing a crane bait. But you know what you're getting into. You know the bait's going to tear up. It's a matter of how many fish you're going to get out of it. But with the smoker, that SSMD, that's a pretty good follow-up for that bait. Way faster float back, but similar, right? So you got a fat whack, 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 left to right, intense action with a quick float back. That would be pretty solid. But like I said, mix in your dive and rise. When you're fishing that crankbait bite, you'd be shocked how many fish that will follow, say, a shallow invader, but will eat dive and rise, because they'd want it just a tick different. What is it? Benihana? I don't think this is his real name, but we'll go from there. Say Benihana. Longtime listener, love the podcast. Meow. Meow back to you, sir. Meow. Looking to purchase fish monkey gloves for late season fishing in the cold up here in the Great White North. What is your preferred model? We actually, what is the model? Last year we did a Spanky M9 video, and I was talking about these gloves. Which are they? Fish monkey. I can tell you when I see
them. The Dry Tech ones, right?
Mm-mm.
That's what you like. Those thin, really, you know.
No.
A lot of dexterity with them in terms of.
These are.
And they're waterproof. Tough.
No. Sherpas. That's what I wear. So I wear the Fish Monkey Sherpa or Fish Monkey Stealth Sherpa gloves. That's my winter glove. And they are, I don't know if they say that, yeah, they're waterproof. These are the warmest gloves I've owned. So, like, my float suit and all this other stuff I have, spent big bucks on that. And then I bought, like, the gloves. After the fact, I bought the gloves that went with it, and I was just disappointed. Froze to death. But the Fish Monkey Sherpa gloves are rocking. Little tip on them. I go with the double XL. I'm a little bit larger, but I want the room to pull them on and off. right? But that's it. I know what you're talking about. The Dry Tech is a
lighter.
Yeah. Oh, that's way too light for winter. You got the Fish Monkey. The Fish Monkey blocker is just like a glove. There's not much to that guy, right? But
yeah, that was more like a mechanic's wear, you right. know. Yeah, just a real light, uninsulated.
Yeah, I mean, that's if you're going that route, I mean, you can pick up just mechanic gloves. But, yeah, they've got the Stealth and Dry Tech, but I'll swear by the freaking Sherpas. They saved my life last year. Now, you're not, I mean, like I said, you can cast in those. You got to be careful playing with your hooks and hanging stuff up. But those are the only gloves I've owned at this point. I'm not with Fish Monkey. I walk by them at the trade shows and wave. You know, but those are the only gloves I've found that have kept my hands dry and warm. And those are rock and roll. Another winter tip, I'll tell you, as a complete aside, and I don't know, they're probably too expensive to buy in to have for the shop, but just another product that's just legit changed the game for me fishing in the winter. USB insoles, right? I kid you not.
USB insoles?
Yeah, they are USB rechargeable insoles.
Oh, okay.
And so you got to take them out of your boots every night. For me, I'm fishing every day, so I got to deal with it. But take them, you plug them into your mini USB, recharge them, little frickin' remote to turn them on. I think mine have a switch on the new ones. I bought the cheapest pair I could find on Amazon last year. For whatever, I don't recall how much it was, but it was inexpensive compared to, like, you'll see some of these companies like heated insoles, like $200. There's no way. I bet you I was sub $40. I don't like myself enough to be comfortable that much. But bought some that were probably sub $40. They outperformed what I expected, and especially when you start out the day and it's really cold, they were awesome. And I mean, they were lasting 8 to 10 hours. So, you know, stuffing your boots with hot hands, I've done it all, horrible, right? And they end up...
Doesn't work.
No, it didn't work for long. The heated insoles with the heated insoles were nice because you're able to keep, you know, mobility in your feet. A lot of times you're putting on so many socks and all this crap where you just don't feel steady Eddie on the boat. But the heated insoles were ripping because it allowed me to wear like one really nice insulated pair of socks. And that was the warmest my feet have been ever. So that's my game plan again this winter, is the heated insoles and the Sherpa gloves. Outside of that, the rest of it is hot garbage, in my opinion. Mm. You know, tried it all. The only thing I haven't done is like a heated jacket. Thinking about trying that.
We'll see. A lot of people doing that around here. Yeah. A lot of people got that for hunting, too.
Yeah, it's going to be a thing.
Well, yeah. Your toes get cold, your fingers get cold, your day's done, musky fishing.
Oh.
Your effectiveness is right out the window. You're just out there suffering and you want to go home.
By the way, if you want to hear another...
Got to keep sharp, baby. Got to keep sharp.
Another secret tip, Jay, for winter
fishing?
Give me a secret.
Yeah.
So, imagine this. It's cold. Mm. It's slightly above sub-freezing or freezing. Or just plain cold. We've caught a fish. Now we've got him in the net, and now we've got to unhook a fish, which is taking our gloves off and getting cold. Dish gloves, everybody. Go to your local Dollar General and buy yourself a pair of triple XL dishwashing gloves. So I'm able to get in the net and fool with the fish without my hands getting wet. And so take your nice warm gloves off, put on your dishwashing gloves, unhook the fish, deal with that so you're not sticking your hands in the cold water. Because that will mess you up. I've done that in the past where you're down there fooling with a fish for way too long, or you're getting your hands wet, right? And then you just can't recoup. So if you're in that really cold water, something just a big rubber glove so you're not getting wet.
Cool. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. It's cheap and effective and it's easy to store. You know what I'm saying? I just have them laying there. You throw them on, you deal with it, and then take them off before you kind of, you know, you're not... You'll get your hands wet when you get to grab him, I've got pictures of me where I've got like dish gloves on. I really don't care. So, Dave, I'm heading over to Lost Land Lake in Teal later this month. Never been there either. You guys familiar with any of that? Any tips, advice? Thank you. Lost Land or Teal? They're both Northwoods, aren't they?
Yeah, that's over by Hayward.
Yeah.
They're action lakes. They're shallow. Haven't been on either one. I've been on some lakes in the area, but not those. Yeah. Notorious for action water. So yeah.
I mean, you'll be all right. They're connected. I'm looking here. We obviously don't know like the back of our hand or anything like that. But yeah, that looks like connected waterways. I mean, all your typical Wisconsin. Oh yeah, I'm looking here. It's like freaking home of the 34, which is cool. You know, you're gonna get into a bunch of fish. Let me pull up a topo map. What do we got here? What we got? You got some islands. I mean, you've got, you know, entering water, exiting water. You've got islands. You've got plenty of structure there. I mean, dial in structurally. All the rules apply, right? Looking like, and I could be wrong, don't kill me, looking like a tannic body of water, Jay. So, are we definitely got some color to it. So, choose appropriately your purples, your blacks, things of that nature. The one thing I'll tell you above all else when it comes to tannic waters, do not sleep on midday. It is shocking how many fish you can catch on tannic systems in the dead middle of the day. When everybody else is putting her on the trailer and going somewhere else or down at the supper club, right, having their afternoon old fashioned before they go back out, midday's been really good to me on tannic water. And definitely,
guy did that 2 days ago at the shop. I think it was Wednesday. Yeah. Got a couple suckers from the big man, Elmer, and came back 2 hours later, and he needed more because he got a 40-inch hybrid and a 44.
There
and
you go.
More suckers. Middle of the day, sun, light wind,
yeah,
dark water.
There you go. He was mad because he suckers, Todd.
Why did these suckers die after I caught two fish?
Yeah.
Not really. No,
ate them whole.
It's happened before, is why I make the joke, folks. People, why sucker died after two fish? Well, yeah, that was the point, wasn't it? These are not pets. This is not PetSmart, sir. But no, I mean, that's so impactful. Like you said, middle of the day. It seems like right now, and people are dealing with it. We went from like, we caught it for like a month, right? So we kind of had fall for a month. We're like, hey, fall's coming, normal thing. It's doing its thing. And whammo bammo, back to 80s. So hopefully that's gone.
Not here. The whole week is supposed to be.
I said, it's hopefully. Crazy. Praying.
It's supposed to be 80 degrees tomorrow.
Frickin' well, put
in
on
in the
your,
Northwoods.
Put on
last day of September. It's crazy.
Put on your shorts, Spanky.
Deal it's with it. They're still biting.
Swamming. All right, Jaybird, say a Vita Zane.
Yeah. All right, guys. Thanks.
All right, we'll catch you. We'll make up next week. Talk to you then. Later.
Beautiful. Bye bye.
My first ski when I was 10 years old. Jumped 3 times and broke my fishing pole. Reminds me sometimes of my 88 Ford. Towing the old tin boat and never moored. Shoreline sand got in my reel. Blew the pole out, grown man don't cry. Caught her big fish one night at 9. Wind came down, sunset closing time. Just didn't matter what the muskie spring. I remember everything. Cold wind comes on in, you were begging me to fish till the sundown. Strong baits come on out of the tackle box after my line broke. The curious